about to hear a revolution in talk radio, Liberty Talk Radio, where the critical thinking will defrag your mind of propaganda-ridden viruses induced by mass media news programming. No BS here, just the facts.
And now we present to you America's quintessential iconoclastic anomaly.
Wow.
In talk radio, your host, Joe Christian.
Welcome, everyone, to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice, broadcasting from our studio in the United States to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. But to do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Tonight, we are honored to have as a returning guest, economist Andy Sutton. Andy is formerly with the financial community, but now he exists solely for the purpose of blowing the whistle on corruption and helping people around the globe become their own advocates. And let's see if he's with us today. Andy, welcome back to Liberty Talk Radio. Thank you so much for being with us.
No problem. It's good to be back. Thank you.
Yeah. Andy, I have a feeling, a sneaking suspicion that you're going to talk about what's going on currently. Am I right?
No, not me. Okay. So there's two things I want to hit really quick here. The first, let's rewind back to 2008.
Okay.
We had a housing bubble that was blown up. We had mortgages that were written that should never have been written. And what they did is they took, say you had 100 neighbors and they all had a mortgage with a particular bank. They would take those mortgages and combine them, and then they would chop them up into what were called mortgage-backed securities. And that was one of the buzzwords of the 2008 crisis, were these mortgage-backed securities. And, I mean, they were outrageous. Some of them. And all of them were rated very high, AAA, for many of them, AA, so forth and so on. And what you had was a situation where you had mortgage-backed securities that were rated the exact same as U.S. government bonds, but there was a big difference. The U.S. government bonds were paying 4-ish, 4.5-ish, 5-ish percent. These mortgage-backed securities, a good number of them, were paying almost double with the same rating. So that was a problem. So we had mortgages written that they were not performing. The country was heading into a recession before this even happened. So Graham and I do an alternative GDP model, which showed a recession in the second quarter of 2006. The Bureau of Economic Analysis and the Commerce Department called it for the start of the recession to be the fourth quarter, 06. So this thing perked for a while, and then we got to 2008, and then the wheels started coming off. And what we had was basically a collapse, and which led us into legislation that was proposed to bail out the banks that wrote all these bad mortgages, which in and of itself was a terrible idea. And just rewinding, this went on during a period of a Monday through a Friday, and people were just absolutely bombarding their representatives with calls about this. It was somewhere, for most legislators, it was somewhere around the neighborhood between 750 and 1,000 phone calls against this bailout for every person that called in that was in favor of it. So it was an overwhelming percentage of Americans did not want to bail out private businesses. Well, they voted on Monday. The bill failed in the House. So Hank Paulson and George W. Bush, man, I know these are names we haven't heard in a long time. And unfortunately, this is one of those deals where I do have to name names because that was what happened. There was arm twisting that went on, and convincing and coercing and cajoling and all those other little words. And I don't know who exactly did what or who did how much of what. It really doesn't matter. But anyway, we got to that Friday and the bill passed, and it was $750 billion at the time. And people were just absolutely blown away by the amount of money that we were talking about. So the banks got bailed out, and that was not the end, though. Everybody thought, well, you know, this thing will end. The markets will recover. The markets didn't actually hit their bottom until the next March. So the TARP bill was passed in October. So December, January, February, March. So 4 months. It was a little bit more than a quarter. So 4 months it took for the Dow Jones, the S&P 500, for those indexes to bottom. And this was not just a United States situation. This was global. So this happened during an election year, oddly enough, a cycle. So fast forward. So $750 billion was a lot of money. And people were screaming against it. We're not going to do that. We're not going to do this. So now fast forward 12 years. And all we hear from the media is that, oh, the United States economy is the strongest it's ever been. It's big, it's bad, it's big, bad, ugly, and it's fantastic. And, you know, we couldn't go any better. And meanwhile, you know, we're puttering along at like 2.5, 3% per year. And you hear all these articles, people don't have any savings. Most people don't have $1,000 for an emergency. Which is true. That's obvious now. So we go forward. And once again, we were seeing the last portion of last year, the economy was starting to slip again. And even at the beginning part of 19, you heard the IMF, European Central Bank, even our Federal Reserve, everybody's talking about a recession. There's a recession coming. There's a recession coming. And then we get to December. Things were definitely slow. The Christmas buying season, to me, did not look very strong. And then all of a sudden, the wheels start falling off again, just like they did back in 2008. And now this time, a biologic was the trigger. Last time, the trigger was a bank failure. Now, what I'm going to say now is an opinion. They're a big, large international bank failed last summer. And it's been propped up for the last about 8, going on 9 months now. And that's obvious when you look at the amount of pumping that has been done with regards to the Fed and some of these other central banks with regards to liquidity and all that stuff. It's obvious they're filling a hole. They've been filling a hole. That hole is a dead bank. It's a zombie bank. But I don't think anybody really wanted to come right out and say it because didn't we just see this movie? Didn't this just happen? We just gave these guys, you know, $750 billion of taxpayer money that we didn't have in 2008. And then the Fed backed them for unknown, who knows how many trillion. I heard as high as 23. 16 was a pretty popular number. I'm pretty sure Larry Kotlikoff was in the ballpark of 16, if I remember correctly. I could be off about that. Don't hold me to that. But I'm pretty sure that's where he was too. So this was a huge bailout. So we have this biologic situation triggering a rout in the markets. And the markets started dropping rapidly. The airlines started screaming for bailouts. Everybody wants to get in line for a bailout. But here's the thing, Joe. I don't hear anybody, or very few, I should say, people that are screaming against this stimulus, bailout, whatever you want to call it. 2.2 some odd trillion dollars. So it's three times the size of the last one. And this is just the first one. There's a bunch of people in Washington that are saying this is only the first step. This is going to be more like 3 or 4 or 5 of these things till we're all done. The Fed. So we got 2.2 from the federal government. That goes on our tab. That goes on the national debt. We don't have this money. All right. So then you get the Federal Reserve, and they've been pumping like crazy. And they got to the point where they said, well, we're willing to pledge up to $4 trillion to backstop this whole thing in the markets. And all of a sudden, it was almost boom. They withdrew that and said, we'll buy it all. We'll buy it all. We're gonna backstop this whole thing. So it went from $1 trillion to $4 trillion to we'll buy it all. And it still hasn't stopped. What is going on? So what I'm going to tell you right now, that these massive measures, especially on the Federal Reserve side, this is not because of a biologic. There's a contagion going around the financial system. In other words, in the words of Britney Spears, oops, we did it again. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
They did it again. We bailed them out, and they did it again.
You know,
but what I want to point out is the fact that our such strong U.S. economy, we're so strong and big and everything, we can't take a month off without being bailed out. So what that tells me is that businesses don't have a month of expenses in reserve. That tells me people don't have a month's expenses in reserve. That tells me state, local, federal, everywhere in between. Nobody has a month's worth of expenses in reserve. Or so few do that it's almost irrelevant.
Right.
That's our super strong U.S. economy. And you and I, we've been talking about this for the intervening almost 12 years between 2008 and now about this very issue. And people have said, you guys are crazy, that you guys are nuts, you're wrong, this is great, it's good. And it's all been debt. It's all been debt. Every level, the feds, the states, the locals, the counties, the library, the people, the corporations. The debt levels are just unreal. So what happens when it breaks? Well, if debt caused the problem, certainly let's bail it out with more debt. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, go ahead. You I'm going to hand off to you. This is a tag team.
No, it's fine. I'm fascinated with what you're saying. I agree with you. I just cannot wrap my head around this because nothing that we've done makes economic sense. First, I want to get a little political. Where are all our conservative Republicans? Where are they? Where are the crowd? How come they're not screaming? How come when they presented this, it was, first of all, I forgot the number of pages that this program is on, whatever you want to call it, this stimulus program. It's hundreds of pages long. I mean, to go through, to read one page, you can probably have a whole week discussion on it, but it's, I forgot how many pages. I don't want to say because I'll be way off, but it's a lot of pages. It's more than 100 pages, I mean, it would take someone who knows what they're talking about, intimately involved in this thing, a month to analyze it. And yet, overnight, these brilliant, brilliant senators and congressmen were able to absorb it, analyze it, and make a decision on it overnight. They didn't even sleep. I mean, it makes absolutely no sense. And where are all the conservative Republicans? Why haven't one of them screamed? This is tantamount to economic insanity. In fact, I can just see Putin now, the president of Russia, the prime minister of Russia, just sitting there laughing his head off, saying, ha ha, gotcha, because their debt problem, which used to be hellacious compared to ours, is minuscule compared to ours, and they've been accumulating precious metals to shore up their currency. They're going to come out the winners, we're going to come out the losers, and no one, I mean, not that I'm brilliant, but no one is saying that in the system itself. I'm sorry for screaming. I'm just so angry I can't see straight. I'm so angry I can't see straight, Andy.
No, I know, and you know me. I don't touch the political stuff. But we're the conservative, the fiscally conservative Americans. I mean, there's like a vacuum. You don't hear, and this is beyond Keynesianism. Keynesian, that was brought into effect, if you will, as an excuse for governments to spend during economic slowdowns. To stimulate. That's where this whole idea of this economic stimulus came from. Well, I mean, there was a big difference between the Great Depression and what's going on for the last 20 years. And that was back then, we had a cookie jar and it had savings written on it, and there was quite a bit of money in it.
Right.
And some of that money was spent to, do Works Progress Administration, Tennessee Valley Authority, build the Hoover Dam, these kinds of things. And, people might debate and whatnot about that and whether that's a good idea to do that or not. But at least we had the money. Now, who's going to buy $2.25 trillion worth of treasury debt so that they can do this? Joe, this is what really scares me, honestly. We are so far into this thing that we can't not bail it out, if that makes any sense. I know it's a double negative.
No, right. Yeah, no, I agree.
You get so far in, the only thing, see, we don't have a choice now. And this is what I was telling people a dozen years ago. Then we had a choice. We didn't have to do that. We could have let every one of those banks fail, like Lehman. And I am sure that there were lots and lots and lots of small to mid-sized commercial banks that would have been more than happy to take on that business and take those accounts and not play all the games that got us into that mess, and this one too. We'll find out at some point. Yeah. And that's the thing, I don't know who's pulling whose strings, but the truth usually comes out and at some point. So we'll know. We'll find out who did what and who didn't do what.
Yeah.
We had a choice then. Now we've leveraged ourselves into a corner where we don't have a choice. So there might be 5 bailouts. There might be 4 bailouts, whatever. It might be $7 trillion. It might be $10 trillion. I don't know how much it's going to be.
Yeah. Well,
if we don't do it, then what do you have? Well, because people don't have savings, and I'm not knocking people. There's a lot of hardworking people that are out there breaking their backs, 2, 2.5, 3 jobs, trying to make ends meet, and they're having a hard time doing it because of price inflation and this and that, and healthcare, how expensive healthcare is and taking care of a family and paying bills. I'm not getting down on people who are working hard.
I agree.
The fact that you're working that hard and you can't build a reserve, that says a lot about the situation that we really have going on for a lot of people. And then you have a group where they just think that, like, this is some kind of playground that, these little plastic cards with the RFID chips in them now, you plug them into the machine and you can have whatever you want. You don't have to pay for it. You can pay installments and you can transfer your balances and get 0% for 12 months or whatever the deal is. And we can just keep doing that. That's the mentality of most of our government and a lot of our people. We just think that we can just keep doing this. And people have been screaming at the top of their lungs, you can't keep doing this. There's going to be a reckoning day. And that's where we're at now. because you've got now the Treasury and the Fed, they're getting together. They've got BlackRock involved. And this is a whole nother thing that's going to happen here. The Fed is totally outside of its mandates as far as price stability and maximum employment. They are basically going to start running a chop shop for securities. That's what's going to happen. So anybody who's listening to Treasury Secretary Mnuchin, or how I'm not sure how you pronounce his name even. Anybody who's listening to that, that you need to keep that in mind. They're basically setting up a chop shop to help distressed assets. So Joe, answer me this. We had this super strong economy. All of a sudden we have this massive pile of distressed assets. What happened? See, back in 07, they blamed the American people. They said, well, people stopped paying their mortgages. That was what caused this back then. What caused it now? This little bug? This little bug caused over $1 trillion right now dollars worth of assets to become distressed or non-performing? I'm not buying it. Not for a second.
Oh, yeah. I hate to say this, but I agree with you. I mean, I wish I had a retort saying, well, Andy, you know what's missing? There's nothing missing in what
really
you're saying. You know, it's a shame.
I really wish you did.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, I really wish you did. I really wish you could say
I
no.
I wish I had, you know.
Did you think there is?
Well, you know how government works. You know how government works. Yeah. You know, they open the door slightly and they give you a little bit here, and then you get accustomed to that. Then they give you a little bit more, a little bit more. Then you become reliant on the government. You know, and I hate to bring this up because people will go, oh, here we go again. You know, listen, I was raised in Harlem, New York. You know, I mean, I was born in an ethnic circle, you know, if you will. You know, I lived in the Bronx. I mean, I hung around with gangs. I mean, I knew poor people, really poor people. I mean, I've been there. And yet, people think that the government can just, what they did, I had to move out of my apartment because they built city-subsidized housing projects and turned really a nice neighborhood. Actually, it was a good neighborhood. It was run by the mafia, but it was a nice neighborhood. And turned it to instant poverty, you know, where there was demands on the government, to the city government, to do everything. The food stamps, pay the rent, provide transportation, you name it. Oh, medical care and everything. And all of a sudden you went from a productive unit, an area, a productive, everyone worked, everybody worked, you know, to where no one worked and the city was paying for everything. I only mention that because I'm talking about over 60 years ago, 65 years ago this happened, right? And now here we go. Jesus, more than 65 years. It's more like almost coming on 68 years ago, you know? And here we are, the whole area is ruined. And this is exactly, that's a microcosm of what's happening to the United States. We are going to give big people these paychecks. We're going to get like $1,200 or whatever the magic number is. What do you think happens when the next month and we don't give them $1,200? There's going to be riots in the streets. You're not going to be able to stop it. Then they have to get rid of the dollar. They're going to have to. They say, well, we're not giving you the money because we're getting rid of the dollar, and then you can do it all online. And somehow people are going to get the money online. How that's going to work, I don't know. But I see this as the downfall of America. The person who's got to be laughing through his teeth has got to be Vladimir Putin. He said these jerks have no idea what they're doing, and he's absolutely correct. I have more respect for that guy, although I know he's a bad guy in many ways, you know, or so they tell me, you know, than I do for our own politicians. And how the conservative Republicans can sign off on hundreds of pages of legislation overnight is beyond me. What happened to our conservative Republicans in Congress? What happened to the conservative women in the Senate? Just lambasting it. Everyone's saying what a wonderful idea this is. Now, I come from New York. I know Trump. Trump has not changed his spots at all. In New York, he failed in every enterprise. He was always in debt. And the only reason why he built the Trump Tower is because it was made out of concrete, because they're the only people that would give him financing to build the building was the mafia, because the mafia controlled the concrete business. I mean, this guy's got a history behind him that if everyone knew, they would probably pack up and move to Europe. I mean, this is the guy's background. And you know something? He hasn't changed his spots at all. He's doing exactly what he did back in the 70s. Drove everything he had into bankruptcy, including himself. And he's doing this now to America. Make America great again? I don't think so. And I'm willing, and I'm not a bettor, I'm not a gambler at all, but I'll bet heavy money I'm right. Now, I'm sorry for taking your time, but I had to get through my mind. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the one thing I will say, and all that, like I said, I stay away from the names. I try to focus on the policy. We're in a situation. I mean, if you take a look at a chart of the Dow Jones, you take a look at a chart of the national debt, money supply. This has become more of a mathematics thing than anything else. Like I said earlier, we're so far into this that we can't not do the bailouts. And I think that's probably why we're not hearing from fiscally conservative individuals in general on this, because everybody has kind of realized we can't get out. It's like one of those Venus flytraps. You know, we're stuck. And we're in this for the rest of the ride, unfortunately. In 2008, I said on this show, I wrote, others wrote, many others spoke and wrote and said, we have one last decent chance to save the Republic. If we don't do it now, meaning 2008.
That's right. I agree.
We're out of luck.
That's right.
We're out of luck. And that's where we're at. We're out of luck.
Yeah.
We're 23 and a half trillion in. We just added another 2.25 at a minimum. So we're looking at like, you know, 25.7, 25.8. It's never going to get paid. Everybody knows it. You know, it's not the, let's back out of the theater real quiet, like, and try and cut our loss. We're on this till it ends now.
I have no idea how this is going to play out. All I know is all of the probabilities are frightening, every one of them. There's no good one. You know, I thought that when Trump came into office, he would be a Republican. I mean, he was a millionaire, you know, a billionaire, whatever he calls himself these days. No one knows how much he's worth, if he's worth anything, you know. And you think he would say, hey, guys, that's not the way you're running airlines, you know. You have to change the oil in the airline. You got to do a lot of things. You have to suffer. So you got to spend money to make money. But you don't spend money to lose money. And that's exactly what we did. We spent money to lose money. And it makes no sense. If we couldn't pay off our debts before this, when things were sort of going well, everyone thought it was going well. I thought everything was going down the toilet, but everything was going well, you know, in their own minds, you know. How are we going to get out of it now when it's exponentially worse? But no one, I mean, I'm not a brilliant guy at all. I'll be the first to admit I don't know what the hell is going on. Where the hell are all these people in Congress that are so friggin' brilliant that no one's saying, hey, wait a minute, guys, we can't afford that. We're going to go bankrupt. We are bankrupt. Not one person out of hundreds, not one person.
Well, there was one guy that did stand up. I think he was from Kentucky, Northern Kentucky, 4th District, I think, spoke out and pretty much got shouted down. We're so far in, now we can't get out.
And
what is worse about it is now we're creating a situation with the Federal Reserve and these special purpose vehicles that they're talking, these aren't cars either. These are financial entities or combobulations and so forth. The Treasury is basically going to start nationalizing the U.S. financial sector. That's what the net result of this is going to be. There's been a couple articles written so far. Graham and I were working on something. I'm hoping to get it out here within the next couple of days, maybe a week. We have research to do. But this, yeah, we're going to nationalize. And you know who went down this road before us that we had an opportunity to learn from? Our friends in Europe, our Spain, Portugal, Italy, Ireland, Greece, all of those countries, they paid their people in part to sit around and basically, you know, take it easy. And they embraced this cradle-to-grave mentality, and it cost them dearly. And then you had, you know, periods of austerity. You don't hear about it that much anymore, but they're still, and now this is going on. It's just horrible what the precarious position that they've put their countries and their economies into by doing this whole cradle to grave thing. And if we've learned anything in the last month, it's that we can't function as a society if we don't have these props in place.
Yeah. Well, you know,
we just can't function.
What I said about Trump is nothing that I read about, but they actually had a documentary about him, you know, and the documentary. So I'm just repeating what's been on television, you know, on not mainstream television, not NBC, but, you know, on the internet, on the off channels, you know, and, you know, so I what I'm saying, what Trump and then the building that was constructed, and it was built by, you know, with concrete rather than the aluminum and that they were using at the time, is something that I heard in a documentary. And I assumed it was a mainstream documentary. If they said it, I'm saying that there must be something to it, you know. So, and I'm not a hater of Trump. I mean, I was rooting for him when he, you know, ran for office. I said, oh, good, we'll have a businessman in there. Although I knew he was a little, you know, not my favorite guy, you know, in the world as far as business is concerned, because I knew he had no one particular business that he did well and did poorly. You know, whenever I watch programs about people who've made a lot of money, you know what they talk about? They don't talk about how much money they made. They talk about all their failures. They remind themselves of their failures. You never noticed that? Yeah. And I remember one time there were five men who were billionaires. I don't remember if this was several years ago. And they were interviewing all five of them. And these guys reminisced. They reminisced about they had like houses in Monte Carlo or something like that. They said, "You have no idea how my money has destroyed me." In effect, they didn't use those words, but how unhappy I am. I never go see all these homes I live in, all these islands that I own. He says, "I'm selling everything. I want to go back to the old lifestyle. I want to go back to work, and I want to create something." Everyone, all five of them. And these guys, I don't remember their names because I didn't recognize any of them, but it were phenomenal interviews, you know? And none of them were saying, "Look how wealthy I am. Look how smart I am." In fact, they said, "Look how wealthy I am. Look how stupid I am." Really, literally, they were saying that about themselves. And you had so much respect for these guys because they were so successful and they were dissatisfied with where they were in life. And they were older. They were all in their 60s and whatever. And billionaire, there had to be a billionaire to be in this one program several years ago, you know? And I never forget that. Wish I could remember the name of one of them, which I cannot do. I just don't remember them. But it was fascinating. It was so humbling about how they opened their minds and their hearts to the people and say, you know, watch yourself, be careful, enjoy what you have. Money doesn't make happiness, basically. And we didn't get that. Yeah. We don't get that from our politicians. And it's got to be that these politicians are making money on this latest piece of legislation, because I know the legislation has items in it already that have nothing to do with the problem that we have now. It's all how do we get money out of the system and fund all of these programs that have been stalled in the Senate and in the Congress.
That's one of the, there have been several really good pieces written about that. And that whole, we know that that's pretty much business as usual. And not just here, pretty much that's mostly a global issue. But that whole business as usual approach to this whole thing, you know, there was almost no talk, and this is what frightens me, honestly. There was no talk about policy. It was all, we need, it has to be big. It's got to be big, big, big. But there was no talk of what kind of policy are we going to create out of this, other than we're just going to do this until it stops, until it doesn't work anymore. And this is what we're going to find out here in the next, I'd say, 3 to 6, maybe 9 months. We're going to find out real quick how resilient we really are by how long it goes by before, like you said, the next month, that check isn't there. You know, $1,200 a person, $500 per child. You know, when that's not there, what's going to happen next month?
Yeah.
So what they've got to do, and this comes down to, this is the media, this is the Fed, this is the you know, our governments of the world, basically, is we've got to sell this idea of going deeper into debt to keep the thing going.
Yeah.
And that's that. And, you know, I deal with kids and 15, 16, 17 year olds, and they look at me like, huh? What? What's going on here? Why are we doing this? This doesn't make any sense. But we can't get the adults to realize that, or at least not in meaningful enough numbers. There's a lot that realize it. Not in meaningful enough numbers to make it to where it matters. That's, you know, every generation has always been very careful of the stewardship of the country and the republic that they were given when they basically stepped into adulthood. And the idea was, you always leave it better than you found it. And my generation, we are completely dropping the ball. And we can't say, well, we borrowed $10 trillion more dollars and on the outside it looks really good. We can't say honestly that we're leaving it better than we found it.
Yeah. You know,
that's a shame.
Yeah. You know, I've told a story, not on the air, but to friends, people that I know, 100 times. My mother used to give me money to go shopping. We lived on right over Morris's grocery store in Harlem. And she gave me, I mean, never forget, she gave me like 61 or 63 cents. And I mean 63 cents. You understand that? Don't forget the number. And I had a lecture on the 63 cents. And I walked down there, walked about maybe 15 feet, you know, to my right, went in there, and I had to buy everything on this list, and it had to be under 63 cents. I had to buy a pickle, this, that, you know, so many slices of ham, you know, whatever the case may be. I mean, there was no chance I could ever go home if I spent more than 63 cents. And I'm not making that up. This is the God's honest truth. And it was good for me. It was good for the family. Because we weren't wealthy. My father had his own little factory, but we didn't make much money. Sometimes we didn't make money at all. Sometimes we lost money. And so we watched literally every penny. When I say penny, I'm not saying that, you know, just figuratively. I mean, truthfully, every penny. And when I see people spending money today, people who have jobs that are making, they're making maybe, you know, $20,000 a year, and they go out and buy a Tesla, I go, boy, that's great. You know how, you know, oh, I'm financing it, you know? I go, you're financing a $55,000 car? Oh, yeah, my payments are only, you know, $1,500 to $2,000 a month. You have no idea. I go nuts. I can't understand it. And so I know so many people in that regard. But it's all that mentality that somehow the money will be there when I need it. And if I can't make it, there'll be someone giving it to me as they are giving it now. And I'm sorry for ranting about my youth, but I'm still the same way. When my car died 3 years ago, my old Subaru, I fell in love with, but it had the old style engine in it, which they didn't have anymore. I couldn't find one in the country. I had to buy a new car. So what did I do? I bought a 2002, this was 3 years ago, 2002 Toyota Sienna for $5,240, you know, and paid cash, you know. Came home, that's it. And the insurance company says, it's too old. We can't give you insurance, you know. What do you call it? Collision insurance. Yeah. So I pay practically nothing because I have a good driving record, pay nothing for insurance. A car is paid for. It sits in my driveway. I don't even use it anymore because I work from home. But, you know, no one thinks that way anymore. This is the way I was trained. This is the way everyone thought on First Avenue in Harlem. And I tell you, I hunger for those days where we were broke. Yeah, I'm sorry for the dialogue, but
it's fine.
I'm sorry.
I had a similar upbringing. I came up in a steel family. And I always knew when the company was doing well and where the economy and when it wasn't, because you could just tell, you know, we ate tomato sandwiches when things were hard.
Yeah.
You know, and times were rough and that sort of thing. And there wasn't money. This is like, there's been a society, like a shift from, you know, it used to be that there was, you know, you go back 100 years, you didn't want to owe somebody. It was kind of like, you felt bad about it and you wanted to get it paid off as soon as possible if you had to borrow from somebody. And now we've gotten to the point where we don't even think twice about it. And like I said, we're following our European brothers and sisters right down the same path. And we've still kind of have this feeling that we're cloaked in immunity because we have the world reserve currency. That's over.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still working for now, but for all intent and purposes, and that's something I think we're going to see within the next 5, 10 maybe years, probably 5, maybe less. I don't know. It's hard to put timelines on this kind of stuff.
Yeah. You don't know.
Because if you're wrong, if you're wrong, then, you know, or if you miss, you know, if you say 5 and it ends up being 7, well, then, you know, you're an idiot and we shouldn't have listened to you at all.
You're a doom and gloomer.
Yeah, exactly.
Doom and gloomer, you know.
But it's, yeah. I don't see how we were able to continue on as we did before. And you're even starting to get a flavor of that in some of the publications that are covering the economy right now. And people are saying, you know, that it's changed. Yeah. Something changed here. And it had nothing to do with the biologic. But we're probably at our limit here.
Before we go, I want to just say I
got a couple of emails from people about the last one. And I'm going to put this audio of this on my website. So okay. If people want to download it to their phone, and a lot of people are saying, hey, you know, I'm kind of stuck at home and, you know, I'm trying to get stuff done and I can't sit and watch, but I'd listen. So yeah. I'm going to throw audio of this up on my website and for people, and andysutton.com. It'll take you right to the page and you can look. And we've got some other stuff there that we should get to, but you know, we've probably beaten people up enough for one night.
Yeah, you know, I don't mean to be hard on Trump, but, you know, I wish he'd just be more ingenuous. He wouldn't be so disingenuous, you know, so many times, because I know some of the things he says just are not right. He says things to make it look good and all that. And I just wish he would be more, you know, open and say, folks, you know, we have a problem. We all have to sacrifice. I'm going to do it. This is what I'm doing. This is what I'm going to ask you to do. I would give him so much credit. But please, you know, when the building is burning down, don't sit there and say, oh, no, it's just it's a big barbecue. You know, don't do that. I mean, that's all I'm asking him to do. I'm asking him to be honest, open with the people and say, we all, instead of borrowing more money, we all have to now sacrifice, unfortunately. And today, is worse than yesterday, than last year, whatever, you know, but it certainly is going to be better than next year, so we better start now. Something along those lines. I mean, I don't know the answer. Believe me, I'm not smart enough to know that. And I like Trump. I mean, I don't think he's a bad guy in a whole bit, but there's something not right the way he's managing the business of this country, and that's what really bothers me. And there may be pressure on him. Who knows? Maybe they say, you know, do this, or, you know, you won't get reelected, or whatever the case may be. And I feel for him. I think he's got a tough job. But I just wish he would be tougher with the United States. He'd be tougher with the people. He'd be more of a disciplinarian. We need someone to square this place away, and I was hoping he would be the guy. You know?
Yeah, we do need some fiscal discipline. And unfortunately, it's one of those kind of things where you can take it on your terms and be proactive, or you can take it on somebody else's terms and have to be reactive. And I think, unfortunately, we crossed the Rubicon on that one in 2008. Yeah. You know, now we're kind of at the mercy of everyone else, and we're going to have to be reactive. And I hope, I maybe shouldn't even say this, but I really hope somewhere there's a chance to, you know, have this a different way, you know, I've got a kid, you've got children, you know, people, you know, we need to really have better stewardship of this country and what we're doing, with, we've been blessed with, and we're not doing it. And that really, it's that weighs heavy on my heart. Honestly, yeah. It really does. That's really what hits the most. We're not doing it. We're not up to it right now.
Yeah.
And I really hope that somehow that changes.
Yeah. Well, Andy, I think we've eaten up the clock. You know that, you know,
and then
I apologize to everyone out there who's a Trump fan, all that. I didn't mean to say anything bad about it. I'm just repeating what I've seen documentaries on television. I hope they're wrong. I wish Trump all the best in the world. I just hope he gets some people like Ron Paul on his team to maybe give him a perspective on alternatives that are probably long term better than they are now, than some of that legislation that's going on now. How you passed hundreds of pages of legislation overnight is beyond me, and I just fear for this country. So
do I.
Yeah. Well, Andy, thank you so much for being on this program. We look forward to seeing you again, and let's do this, and let's keep the dialogue going back and forth, and maybe we can increase our listenership and all this and get people more proactive in what is going on.
I hope so, because we can at least clean our own backyards.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. Sounds good. I appreciate you having me on.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you, Andy. Bye-bye now.
All right. Take care.